Back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, the 11th of February, 2025 on Connecticut Today, where I open the show with my opinion that Connecticut needs to approve a limited bear hunt, at least for public safety reasons, sometime soon. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio talked about the possible implementation of user fees and or taxes on owners of electric vehicles in the state. Quinnipiac University immigration law professor Sheila Hare joined us to discuss the current controversy between a sanctuary city and a so-called welcoming city, while CBS News reporter Robert Berger checked in from Jerusalem regarding the current ceasefire in the Middle East and President Trump's surprising proposals for a post-war Gaza. All right, let's start off today with a little game, shall we? A little riddle, a little exercise for you. I'm going to list a few things here, and you tell me why these are all alike in some way. And you can think about this. It's not like I'm going to take calls on this list, but you'll get where I'm going here, okay? So here we go. You ready for this? Deer. Okay, you see a lot of deers out there. Deer in Connecticut. Waterfowl. Waterfowl. What's a waterfowl, Paul? Goose, snipe, woodcocks, and black duck. Those are considered the native waterfowl in the great state of Connecticut. Small game. What's considered small game in the state? Rabbits? Rabbits, snowshoe hares, I have no idea what that is, coyotes, and red and gray foxes, pheasants, quail, and ruffed grouse. Again, something in my 64 years on this earth, or almost 64, I have no idea what a ruffed grouse is. Coyotes and red and gray foxes. So, again, we went over that. So, I'm going to read this list again. It's not hard. You probably know where I'm going with this, but let me just set this up again. All right, will you give me the pleasure of setting it up? It's a creative opening of the show here. Deer, goose, waterfowl, snipe, woodcock, and black duck. Coyotes, red and gray foxes, cottontail rabbits, pheasants, quail, and again, the ever-popular ruffed grouse. You know what? You know what's all common with them, right? You can hunt them and kill them in Connecticut. Our state laws, the hunting regulations, I don't hunt. I've never hunted before. I have no desire to. I just don't want to go through the hassle of killing something, bringing it back, you know, stripping it, cleaning it, and then eating it. No, when you can go get chicken McNuggets, why would you want to do that? But that's just me. I have friends who hunt. So in the state of Connecticut, you can hunt again. And by the way, you can use archery, revolvers, rifles, muzzle loaders when you hunt and kill deer. Yes. You can kill Bambi in Connecticut. Again, you can kill waterfowl, basic varieties, snipe, woodcock, black duck, and goose. You can hunt little cottontail rabbits, hares, coyotes, red and gray foxes, quail, pheasants, all that. Why am I mentioning this? Well, again, it seems like we're starting to get this argument at the state capitol about having a bear hunting season. Now, again, the usual suspects are out there saying, leave the bears alone. It's okay. They're just hungry, whatever. But they turn up in people's houses. There have been thousands of encounters. You remember a couple of 3 years ago, a bear up in the Brookfield, Litchfield, New Milford area almost dragged a kid into the woods. I don't think they were going to play backgammon. Once they got there, the bear didn't have his backgammon board and his black and white pieces and his dice out. I don't think so. Thank God you had that next-door neighbor who grabbed a shovel and threw it at the bear, hit it in the head, whatever. So eventually somebody's going to get killed because there are more and more and more bear in Connecticut. Now, most of them bears, we're not talking about, you know, Yogi and Boo Boo here and Smokey. They're in the Litchfield Hills area, the cozy northwest corner of Connecticut. So there is a proposal now to, again, have a regulated bear hunting season, either in the state or in the northwest corner of the state. Now, of course, the bills are coming and they're already staking out their positions. But here's what I don't get. And please explain this to me. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Please explain this to me. What is it about the human condition where we will think about, we won't think any way, shape, or form, we won't hesitate, we won't pump the brakes on killing. I mean, how many millions of chickens do we kill in this country every year? And duck, and goose, and deer. But my God, don't kill the bear. Why? Please explain that to me. And I know what you're likely going to say. Well, you know, a lot of people eat what they kill. Okay, well, you can eat bear. Now, most people don't. They don't do the whole bear meat thing. Some, you know, Neanderthals do. I get it. I understand it. But shouldn't we be culling the herd for safety? And again, I don't own a rifle. I'm not a hunter. But, you know, my God, I'll give you some of the figures coming back here after the break. But I don't get it. Do you realize every sandwich, or as my dearly departed aunt used to say, a nice sandwich, every chicken sandwich you eat at Chick-fil-A or McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's, that was a living being at one point. It had kids, maybe. Maybe it was married. Maybe Mr. and Mrs. Chicken just got home from a nice trip somewhere. They flew south for the winter, and now they're in your mouth with the French fries and Diet Coke. I don't get it. What is this pushback against bear hunting season? When the state DEP says we got to do this, every year we don't do this, it becomes more dangerous, something really bad is going to happen. So you tell me, please, learn me something, as they say. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We'll kill 10 billion chickens, but we don't thin the herd of bears for public safety. I don't get it. Deep there, they watch the wildlife numbers in Connecticut. They do the best estimates they can. They say there's between 1,000 and 1,200 bears in the state, a lot of them in the northwest corner, Litchfield County, the Tony and expensive Litchfield Hills up there. And they've been saying for a couple of 3 years that this is getting dangerous now. All the other states here in the Northeast, with the exception of Connecticut and Rhode Island, have bear hunts. And you've got to be registered. You have to have a license. These other states do it for a set amount of time. If you kill a bear, you've got to call an environmental officer in that state, and they come and tag it. They take the information. But yet, this hasn't happened in Connecticut. And frankly, if you went out and started killing bears here to cull the herd, I wouldn't care. I don't care. I don't care. And you know why I don't care? Because people are phonies, a lot of them. Not you people who call the show here. But the same people who sob and cry and who think, well, we can't kill Boo Boo or Smokey, they'll have a chicken sandwich at lunch. Well, wasn't that little chickadee bouncing around somewhere at one point? So are you on board with a limited, controlled bear hunt? Why wouldn't you be? Oh, well, it's not the bear's fault. Well, it is, because you don't kill them and they don't fear people, and you see all the near misses we've had. God forbid something doesn't happen where a small kid is snatched out of a backyard and becomes lunch for some bear. I hate to put it that way, but every year we hear that, and these are the state scientists saying this. These are people that work for DEEP, and they say, hey, we have to do something here. And no, you can't relocate a bear. They don't work that way. They are highly intuitive animals. They don't work that way. Jeff in Westport leads us off. Jeff, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul, great show. So, I'm originally from Wisconsin, and in Wisconsin we kill and eat everything. So, I've had bear meat.
Yeah.
Bear meat's a nice sweet meat, better than venison, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But anyways, in Monroe, they have two bears right now.
Okay.
And they've been ripping down bird feeders and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And they should have a bear hunt. Instead of, what's going to happen is all these PETA people, because there's a lot of people... PETA people in Connecticut are going to start saying, well, why don't we just euthanize them? Which means they'll kill the bear, but they won't use the meat. In Wisconsin, when they do that, they use the meat at soup kitchens and, you know, food source. So out here, it's sort of backwards. So when I first came out here, I used to go bow hunting in Weston because it's legal to bow hunt in Weston, Connecticut for deer.
Yeah.
And the first 2 years I came out here, because I was still into hunting, and I had to track a deer through a couple people's neighbors' yards. And that was the last time I bow hunted. It was just too much of a hassle. Some people were complaining. They called the Weston police. Weston police came out. They helped me drag the deer out of the woods. They're nice enough to do that. But that was the last time I hunted out here. I'll fly out to Wisconsin to hunt.
Yeah, Jeff, and be careful. Yeah, I don't blame you, because with all the bears here, you don't want to go in the woods. Because, again, the deep scientists, not the NRA, not all these hunting groups, it is the qualified, educated hunters that, I'm sorry, scientists that work for deep saying, hey, if you don't hunt these bears, the situation for humans gets more dangerous. So I don't get it. Please explain to me why as a society, we'll hunt and kill certain things, I mean, without a nary a pause. But other things, it's like, well, we can't kill that. Why? Explain to me why. Especially if the experts are saying, hey, by you not doing that over the years, you're setting up a more difficult pattern for you. Let's go to Ron in Trumbull, who's with us. Ron, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I think our legislators are a little confused in terms of what we mean by bear. I've got to make sure they understand that we're spelling bear, B-E-A-R,
yeah,
not B-A-R-E.
Yes. All right, Ron, I got you. And anything else?
I'm with you. Pose a danger in the future. It'd be better to handle it ahead of time as opposed to in a panic like we do with everything else.
Well, that's the whole thing. And Ron, thank you. Appreciate the call. Yeah, you don't want to. When you panic, you have more of a chance to make bad decisions. Now, says here, I'm looking at a story from NBC Connecticut, NBC 30. According to Deep, now again, these are state scientists who get paid. These are experts in watching animal migration patterns. They analyze fur. They analyze droppings, DNA sequencing and stuff to find out what's going on with the bears and other animals here in the state. According to Deep, in 2024, there were over 3,000 human-bear conflicts. These conflicts include aggressive encounters with bears, bears entering houses, cars, or garages, bears eating from trash cans, and more. Now, here's the problem. And part of the problem is you can't have it both ways. You can't scream and yell that some hunter is going to be okayed by the state to kill Yogi and Boo Boo when a lot of these people don't listen to what the state is telling you as to how to cut down the bear encounters. So, and we'll talk about this coming back, but you don't listen to what the paid experts tell you here, and yet then you get upset because you think Smokey, Yogi, and Boo Boo are going to get gunned down in some carpet bombing by a Black Hawk helicopter. It's not going to work that way. Do you favor a bear hunt or not? I do. Again, they're talking about doing this scientifically to only licensed hunters for possibly a short period of time. And if you don't like that, I respect you, but why? Explain to me why it's okay to mow down how many million chickens in this country every year. But it, when the bear population is becoming a physical danger to people and we have close calls, why is it okay to, you know, blow up a chicken but not a bear? Let's talk EVs. Megan Portfolio with her weekly check-in right now. She, of course, of the Hartford Portfolio blog, Yankee Institute. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm living the dream. And like I always say when people say that to me, how am I doing? I'm saying, well, listen, it's too late for med school, law school, or divinity school. So I have no idea what else
I hear you, my friend.
Right? So your piece in the Hartford Portfolio was interesting because, as you say, time may be a chicken down and may be up for, because of things we don't do here in Connecticut that other states do, for a sort of free ride in some ways that EV owners are getting in this state. So what's up with that?
All right, well, let me preface this with, I am not in favor of taxing everything. Like, okay. I already feel like I'm an ATM for our General Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one instance, let me lay this out. So
okay.
If you drive a gas car, when you go to the gas station, you pay 25-cent excise tax. Then you pay a 7% petroleum gas receipts earned tax. Then you pay an 18.4-cent federal tax. And then the rest of it is gas for your car. On the other hand, the EV drivers get paid to drive because they don't go to the gas station, so they don't have to pay any of these taxes on the gas, and they get rebates to buy their cars. So essentially, they're driving on our highways. They're free riders right now.
Mm-hmm.
And our gas taxes, both at the state and the federal level, they go to improvements for the highways,
bridge
repair,
mm-hmm.
you know, all kinds of infrastructure. And there, you know, and the thought is, you know, we're using the highway, and I don't mind having to pay, like, at my user fee. I'm using the highway; they need to be maintained, so I'm a problem with that. But other people are using the highways, and their cars are heavier than mine. Not as heavy as like big trucks, because big trucks do the most damage. But big trucks, they pay those same gas taxes
mm-hmm.
on top of that Connecticut highway use tax, so they're paying their fair share. The gas car drivers are paying their fair share, but the EV drivers are paying nothing. So Republicans have put in a bill this year, and it's pretty fair. They haven't laid it out yet, but what they want to do is they want to have a fee at registration.
Yeah.
39 states already do that.
Yeah, a lot of states already do that. Yeah.
Yeah, red states and blue states. Colorado charges $50. They're on the low end.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other states, you know, I think Colorado or Montana was about $200.
Yeah.
So they pay that every time they renew their registration.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, 32 states impose a 3-cent tax when you're filling up on electricity at public car chargers. So in Connecticut right now, so they pay nothing in taxes to go towards the special transportation fund, which maintains the roads.
Mm-hmm.
But then they can fill up their electricity at these public car chargers and not have to pay anything. They're free. Like in New Haven, they have 266 chargers that are public.
Yeah.
130 of them are free.
So,
and the best part, well, this is just a little karma because I know how much the left hates Elon Musk.
Yeah.
I was looking to see like the most rebated car in Connecticut, and it's the Tesla.
Of course. So, like, of course it is.
Making Elon richer.
Yeah. I mean, geez, if I knew, Megan, that you know, I'm not paying gasoline tax and I'm not paying tax on electricity, of course I would do that. It's human nature. Now, as I told my listeners before, knowing you were coming on and telling them this, this is a bill, as you say, sponsored by and proposed now by Republicans. Does that mean it will have zero support because if it's anti-EV, it's got zero support? Or does this thing have a real shot or not?
That's a very good question, Paul. Well, a lot of bills that Republicans put in, especially at this stage in the game when they're just like a super minority, they just sit there. They get written. And you look at the bill on the website, and it just sits there. There's no action. This has actually made it to the next level. So they're reserving it for a subject matter public hearing. A subject matter public hearing basically just is they have like one of these concept bills. They haven't really ironed out the details. So activists come in, people come in, they talk about it, and then they design the bill after. So it's actually getting a public hearing. So that is progress. But I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know where it's going to go. But the left does like taxes, so you never know.
Yeah, but see, in Megan Portfolio, of course, the guest, the Hartford Portfolio, talking about a bill from the Republicans that would have EV drivers, consumer-grade EV drivers, pay something. Because, Megan, as you mentioned, I don't think, and I mentioned this before, and I get phone calls on this and emails, and, Megan, people don't know that, well, they may know, for example, that, EV owners are not paying gasoline tax, obviously, but they are surprised when I tell them, like you do, hey, they pay no extra fees on anything during the year, especially if they find one of these free chargers.
Yeah, the environmentalists have been speaking out about this for quite some time. They actually call it a penalty, an EV penalty. But it's not really a penalty. No one's punishing you. You're using the roads. And the roads need to be maintained, and the bridges need to be maintained. I mean, how many bridges need work in our state? I haven't looked at the list lately, but the list has been pretty high.
Yeah.
And the money comes from our gas taxes. But when you start pushing people to drive EVs, again, I don't have a problem. I don't really care what car you drive.
I don't either.
So I really don't. But the state does care, and they keep pushing this EV thing, which whatever, that they love the EVs, that's fine too.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to realize the more EVs that are on the road, right now there's 52,000 registered EVs in Connecticut.
Okay.
The more you push on that, there's going to be less gas cars. Less gas cars means less gas tax. How are we going to maintain our highways?
So think about that. Think about that. That figure you just gave, folks, Megan just, and it's in her column, you can read this. There are almost 53,000, which is no small number. There are almost...
It's probably a little more. That figure came from the state from July. That was the last number that they reported. So I imagine that has, gone up a little bit.
Okay,
I don't think it's gone up to a million, but it's going to be more than almost 53,000.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, folks, you're listening to this now. There are at least 53,000 vehicles on Connecticut roads that aren't paying any gasoline tax. I mean, where's the equity? They always talk about equity,
where's
right?
Where's the equity? Where...
right? When we always talk about
Paul,
equity.
Equity was so 2024.
Yeah. Well, can we stick our favorite phrase, Connecticut values, in there, Megan? Where are the Connecticut values?
Where are the values?
Yeah. Where are the values? All right, folks, check it out. The Hartford Portfolio, Megan Portfolio. All right. Keep digging, and we'll talk to you next week.
Oh, enjoy mornings for the rest
of
the week.
The early alarm, the 3:30 alarm. Think of me if you get up in the middle of the night, it's 3:30.
Oh, my foster dog Bruno will have me up, so maybe I'll tune in.
Nice. Tell Bruno I said hi, okay?
I will.
All right, Megan Portfolio. Well, you remember a couple of weeks back, maybe about a month or so back, we had William Tong, the Attorney General here in Connecticut, basically say publicly, stop using the phrase sanctuary city. And then we had Mayor Joe Ganim in Bridgeport say, well, we're kind of a welcoming city. We're not a sanctuary city. And now you have the mayor of New Haven, Justin Elliker, saying, we're joining in a lawsuit against the Trump White House. And we, too, are a welcoming city. Is there a difference? Joining us right now as a guest that we have had on numerous times before, Quinnipiac University immigration law professor Sheila Hare, to try and hash all this out for us. Professor, good to have you back. How are you?
Hi, great to hear from you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so, I'm reading this, and I wanted to have you on because I'm like, well, welcoming city versus sanctuary city, is there really a legal distinction here? And is this part of, an organized legal strategy? What do you think of this whole thing?
I usually say that, frankly, with the term sanctuary policies or states or cities, there's just a whole lot of things that can be encompassed in that terminology.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the devil is in details in terms of how far the jurisdiction goes. And these can be enacted at the city level, at the state level, and you can even go the other way. We've seen in some states where they prohibit at the state level municipalities from enacting these sorts of policies. But again, it can involve a lot of different provisions, like generally speaking, refusal to cooperate with ICE. But it can be as simple as, you know, refusing to comply with ICE detainers to hold people when they finish serving their state term, refusing to hold them so that ICE can eventually come and pick them up, restricting access of ICE to local jails. And in Connecticut, we have both the detainer policy and also limiting disclosure of sensitive information. So, you know, I think these terms are thrown around a lot. And I think there is a little fear, frankly, that Trump is going after people. But I'm very pleased to see that we have this lawsuit here because, you know, this is not our first rodeo with this issue, right? The Trump administration in first time around 2017 tried to restrict funds to sanctuary jurisdictions. And the courts, you know, were pretty clear he failed. So I'm hoping and fully expect that we'll see that result again.
So what happens, though, Professor, with this language? So if somebody is arguing against this and in favor of these cities and whomever's going to argue this, I don't know what attorney would take up a class action suit like this or numerous jurisdictions, is part of the tactic here to say, well, you know, Your Honor, or whatever federal court they're on, you know, they're arguing this. It's pretty plain right here in this statue. It's a welcoming city, and welcoming can mean a number of things. Is that kind of tactic number one here?
Honestly, I think tactic number one is to claim that this violates the Constitution and all other and a lot of other provisions, legal provisions that the courts have been upholding pretty consistently. That is that Congress, you know, can make rules about immigration. Here's the only tension. Congress makes rules about immigration. Mm-hmm. And so absolutely. However, the federal government can't violate states' independence, right, as envisioned in the 10th Amendment. So there's this thing called like anti-commandeering. Mm-hmm. The federal government can't force states to do stuff. And that's essentially what states and municipalities are taking advantage of by saying, yeah, that's absolutely right. If you all want to engage in mass deportation, for example, which is what we're looking at right now, you guys can't force us to spend precious dollars hanging on to these people and aiding you and allowing you to come in and providing information to you when we have determined as states that we want to use our law enforcement authority to, let's say, go after the really important people. Like if we're going to engage in enforcement, we want to actually make sure we're focusing on the worst individuals.
So is that the tactic here, you think, Professor? And Professor Sheila Hare is the guest from Quinnipiac University, immigration law specialist and professor. So is that a possible argument saying, hey, we don't want to go after the guy who's working in a restaurant or, you know, the woman who's working in a hotel, but if these illegals or undocumented or gangbangers or people that already have deportation orders, that's what we should be focusing on. Is that a tactic then?
That is exactly right. I mean, again, putting aside the legal argument, but that this is what courts have held consistently based on our constitutional structure. Absolutely. And then it makes sense, right? Especially, by the way, it makes sense in the age, like however you felt about sanctuary policies before, I actually think the argument is better than ever for really thinking about these policies, because with the Trump administration saying we're engaging in mass deportation, we're going to come up with a list of things that we're going to look at. But guess what? Everybody is on notice. We can pick absolutely anybody up. I think that's exactly right. It's Connecticut saying, well, you can't force us to take our state tax dollars and make our law enforcement officials go around and do your bidding when we've made a decision as a state or as a city that we actually want to focus our dollars on people who may actually be putting our communities at risk. And I think the other consideration is the other safety concern, which is that when you have policies like this, mass deportation, that is, you know, it really undermines the public trust. I mean, we can talk about like the incredible effects, ripple effects we're seeing now, whether these raids are being carried out in practice in Connecticut, people are terrified. And so this really undermines trust in terms of people simply coming forward to the police and saying, hey, I'm the victim of a crime. I'm undocumented, but could you please help me out? I think in this era of mass deportation, we really undermine that trust. And I think that's what sanctuary's policies are intended to do, to help law enforcement focus on what we've determined is important as a focus and kind of ignore the noise and encourage people to trust law enforcement when they have criminal actions being committed against them.
Finally, do you think this eventually makes its way to the Supreme Court, A, and B, do you think the court would have the five justices who would really want to see this? Because this is, I could see them being all in that big room going, oh boy, I don't know if we want to do this, or does this just get bounced around on the federal level for 3 or 4 years?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say that the system is fast. So, yeah, bounced around for a while. Absolutely. And there's a reason why things bounce around in court. The Supreme Court needs time to see different decisions and really make a good and reasoned decision after having seen the evolvement in the court. So I think taking a little time may not be the worst thing. But, yeah, honestly, if we're judging it based on what happened last time, the Supreme Court didn't even grant cert on the decision to knock some of these attempts by the Trump administration to get at sanctuary policies. You know, we have a slightly different Supreme Court, but frankly, I continue to have faith in the court, but I don't like to make guesses,
yeah,
especially at the Supreme Court level. But I do think there's solid, Ninth Circuit case law and other case law out there that's pretty clear.
Quinnipiac University Law Professor Sheila Hare. Professor, good to chat with you again. Take care, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road. Be good. Thanks.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right. As we have progressed through the program here, you've been hearing these updates top and bottom of the hour on CBS News regarding, I guess, what's now a fast-changing situation once again in the Middle East with Israel, Hamas, President Trump, who spoke today with the King of Jordan, and now a new deadline, apparently. And what is up with this Trump idea that some people are saying it's worth a look into what to do with the Palestinians in Gaza? Robert Berger, CBS News correspondent, longtime gentleman covering the Middle East, is with us to give us the latest on this. Robert, good to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. What is transpiring right now, Robert? There's a lot going on today, so fill us in. How are you?
A lot. Well, the King of Jordan was at the White House, where we got a lot of headlines from President Trump bringing that controversial plan, you know, about moving about 2 million Palestinians out of Gaza. He wants to move them to Jordan and Egypt. So you had the King of Egypt, Abdullah, today at the White House, kind of putting him on the spot. He danced around it, certainly didn't want to confront the president. But obviously the Egyptians and Jordanians don't really like this idea.
You know, Robert, I'm wondering, when he first floated this about a week ago, I think it was, whatever, of course, most people said, well, this is ridiculous. And I brushed it off, too. And I'm wondering, what do you think, Robert, knowing the politics of the region as well as you do, is this kind of to get the other surrounding countries a little off balance? Because they've always been criticized as well. If you care so much about the Palestinians, why don't you help them a little more? Is there a method to this madness or not?
Yeah, I think there is. Now, it could be just an opening shot. You know, in Middle East negotiations, if you go to a bazaar, say, right, you go to the Arab bazaar, prices start really high. And then, you know, they gradually come down and, you know, you can get it for a good price. I mean, that could be one strategy of the president. He keeps doubling down and saying that he is serious about this proposal. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has come out in favor of it. He's got right wing constituency in his party that says, look, it's thinking outside the box because nothing else has really worked. Everybody talks about the idea of a Palestinian state, but after October 7th, I think for obvious reasons, the Israelis really don't like that idea. Mm. So I can't imagine it happening, but it is certainly raising eyebrows. And maybe actually Abdullah said today, the King of Jordan at the White House said, well, we're going to have an Arab summit later in the month, and we'll come back with some proposals of our own.
Interesting. And finally, Robert, what is this now of a hard deadline coming up in just a few days? Mr. Trump talking tough again about getting the rest of the hostages out. What's the latest on that?
Well, Hamas was supposed to release three Israeli hostages Saturday, but yesterday they came out this coming Saturday. Yesterday, Hamas came out and said, oh, no, we're not going to do that because Israel is violating the agreement. And then President Trump said I want not just three hostages to come out. I want all of them out by Saturday or there's going to be all hell to pay. And just a little while ago, Prime Minister Netanyahu doubling down, saying he wants a release of hostages by Saturday or Israel is going to resume the war. And he's even sending troops to Gaza.
Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem. Robert, thank you. Stay safe and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks.
Appreciate it. There you go, man. Fast and furious in the Middle East there. How about that?